Okay, thank you for sharing. Got one more question for you. And the question is this. In light of your reading of chapter 4, telling the story, and of listening to today's presentation, what one line, phrase, or sentence struck you or grabbed you? Okay? What one line or phrase struck you or grabbed you or is memorable for you?
Thank you. It was, you said the impression and
impression is that expression leads to
depression. If you don't, it's depression.
Correct.
I think in a nutshell, that really defines one method.
Yeah,
anyways.
Definitely. Let me give you a good example. You know, you've probably heard this before, but the work for us men is to deal with our grief or our sadness. Because in our culture, grief or sadness is not seen as something manly. But for a woman, it's her anger. It's her anger. Because you know, as I do, ladies, that an angry woman is a... And it's one of those things that a lot of women just feel so constricted. So, let's suppose something happens and you get really angry. Okay? If you don't find a means, a healthy means of admitting and expressing it, then you're going to feel ashamed, embarrassed, and it slips into depression. Why am I in this mood? And I lived with a woman for my whole life that lived her life that way. I'd walk in the kitchen, "Mom, what are you upset about?" "I'm not upset." "Oh, okay. What are you?" She'd usually say things like, "I'm frustrated," or "I'm disappointed." But for a woman to say, "I'm angry," is finding your voice. Okay? Of course, there's different colors and nuances of every emotion, but to say it is the first step of telling your story. So you're admitting this impression is, whatever happened, I'm angry. Okay? Or I'm afraid. And to admit that moves you to the next stage. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to express? How are you going to honor it? Okay? So it may be that you end up throwing a rock. Not at the person, but you find your garden or something. But it's connecting with your body. Otherwise, slowly, you begin to judge yourself as, "I'm bad, I'm wrong." And then it becomes depression. Yeah. So, what phrase grabbed you?
Hi, I'm Sue. Where you explained that if something happens and you don't know what's going on around you, but it is seems to be a culmination of the past. I've experienced that, and I was so glad to hear it. And that's what struck me, because Now I have a way to deal with it.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Sue. Isn't it great when somebody, either publicly or privately, says something in a different way? It's like, "Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense for me. Now I understand. Now I understand." That's the gift. I don't know about you, but for me, once I understand something, I really make leaps of growth.
We've heard you speak many times, and you're always inspiring. And I tend to leave it right here. But this time you've given us homework, and I'm really happy with the talk and the avenues you've opened up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I must tell you, as a minister of the gospel, I believe this is the most misunderstood area is forgiveness. And yet many scripture scholars say this is the heart of the Christian message. We need to become experts in forgiveness. And that's just a theological word, a biblical metaphor that means live a life of learning how to release that which impedes your own ability to give and receive love. That's what it means. So when you choose not to forgive, when we choose not to forgive, we're stuck in the past. Alice.
I like when you said victimization is an event, but being a victim is a choice. Reminds me of Jesus, who, you know, was victimized but wasn't a victim. Especially I like when he said, "No one takes my life from me, I give it freely," walked into
exactly.
it. So that's great.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that one line was given a lot of price. This you should have heard this poor lady's story. Wow.
Well, I wasn't going to come forward, but I am.
Okay.
I'm just back from the Maritime Provinces in Canada, and my stepmother is 91, and she's starting to lose it. And when I was 13, my father died, and she got a boyfriend really quickly, and I really left the house. I left the house. And I for years had this big hole inside my body. And only in recent years, I'm 72 now, only in recent years have I understood what alcohol does. And what alcohol does when you're married to an alcoholic person, and the effect on everybody. And so I'm just exploring that whole and seeing her differently, seeing the bigger picture, seeing the bigger picture of what was involved. I still had the hole, but the hole isn't there anymore. But I appreciate you've said so much. You've said so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Patricia. Thank you for sharing that. You know, there's a good example. Like, so often, in our desire to quickly and efficiently move through trauma, we forgive too quickly. And what Patricia just said is so important, because this may sound strange, but not only do we need to forgive the alcoholic and ramification, but to forgive even the alcohol. You see? Because alcohol doesn't have morality. It can be used for good. It can be used for ill. It can harm one person, be fine for another. But the whole layer is a forgiveness. And as we go back over it, you know you're still stuck when you don't feel the sense of, as Jesus said in John 8, about living in freedom. If it's not there, and you still feel like, okay, I can't go back home, you know, I'm still angry, okay, there's other layers that need to be looked at. Okay, and it's not being judgmental, it's just looking at the facts.
Jim, it was a wonderful, yes, incredible talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What I really appreciated, what resonated with me, is where you said our enemy can become our deepest soul friend. And I think that's an incredible idea, embracing the in our tradition, the leper, St. Yeah. Francis. So that's an incredible insight. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Could I offer one too?
By all means, Tom.
You know, I'm a musician, and I responded to your meditation on silence. People don't think, when they think of music, as something that requires the silence between the notes. But yet there is a very good working definition of music that goes like this. Music is structured sound and structured silence in created time.
Oh, wow, that's good. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much. And I'm a campus minister for 20 years in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. But I have to say what struck me was the body memory. And I saw that going through with my students, and I knew of the concept and would ask them oftentimes when they were drinking too much and trying to erase the body memory, because I think that is what drugs and alcohol do. To remember and look back, and they would have to ask questions of their family, and they'd start getting it.
Yeah,
it's very important. I'm also an adult child of an alcoholic, okay, and done work on that. And I'd have to say that yes, we forgive the alcohol, but the people that are marketing the alcohol, we need to do something about.
There you go. That's a good point. There's another layer, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're right. Yeah. So, another way of telling a story, and this would be following up on what you were saying, is the effects of any type of addiction, whether it's to a substance or to a way of thinking or to one's feelings. They can become very addictive. I mean, take a look at the great market for people who are addicted to, what do they call it, when it's a... it comes from the pituitary gland, and they create their highs, dangerous things. Adrenaline rush, that's it, thank you. that's a real addiction. You know, I remember interviewing a young couple, and I'm not kidding, it's the actual truth. Tells you how blind, deaf, and dumb we can be. He was 23, and we got to the point of, say, could you tell me a little bit about your parents and their marriage, okay? He was so angry. He just changed right in front of my face. He said, I don't want to talk about it. I said, why? He says, my mom was just nothing but an addict. She was a heroin addict. I said, what about your dad? Well, he was an alcoholic. And I said, well, how has it affected you? Oh, I'm fine. And I said, okay, all right. So I asked another question, and I could tell he didn't want to go there. I think, this is not going to be a good session. And, of course, his poor fiancée is sitting there really squirming. And so the next session, we got around to... well, tell me what you like to do for hobbies and stuff. And he named like three things were high adrenaline rushes. One was this type of motorcycle riding that's quite dangerous. Another one was skydiving. Third one was, I think, helicopter skiing. And so so I turned to her and I said, so how do you feel about that? And of course, she talked about fear and I don't like it. And I said, so I thought you told me you weren't addicted. I'm not addicted. And I said, oh, okay. So in other words, you've heard what she said and now you're going to give this up? She said, I'm not giving it up. I said, so what is it? You're either addicted or you're not. In other words, exactly, yeah. It's like, I'm going to do what I... It's like, well, we need to talk about this if you're going to be married to this woman. You know, so in other words, it comes out in different ways. So things like overeating or undereating, all these things, if we cannot not stop it, then you're not free. Something needs to be released. So I often tell people who come and talk about, like, say, eating addictions, it's like, well, what's eating you? Not what are you eating, but what's eating you? We turn the questions inside out, come from the soul. Let go of the medical perspective. But what's eating you that you feel you're starved and you have to keep feeding this ghost inside of you? This voice that's aching to be expressed. Okay? Somebody else has...
I've got the microphone here. I was going to ask you about... I know that you are interested and you are have a job of forming the new priests.
Yeah.
Are they getting this... I mean, you are a gem to have all of us know what you're teaching. Are you teaching these to the young priests? Are they getting any of this therapy and all the things that you're talking about here?
Well, thank you, Judith. Are we being taped right now? Why don't you turn it off and I'll answer the question. Well, I'll be very honest with you. I'm giving it to them, but they don't like it. And they don't want it. Depending upon the particular class or ambiance, they call it New Age, psychology. They question my Catholicism. I mean, it's down the list. Thankfully, the Archbishop supports what I'm doing and offering and what the faculty does. But I don't know how much you've worked with this particular generation. They have are disconnected from the signs and symbols that most of us grew up with. And so their level of identity has been deeply hampered. And so they look for the externals. But this type of thing, I'm trying to say this as politely as I can, is too much work for them. They want the instantaneous, just tell me the prayer, Father. Give me a prayer that will take this pain away. You know, give me the sign that I'll feel holy, you know. And as you know, there's nothing like that. So it's a real, we call all this whole work human formation. They really rebel against it. So yes, they're given it, but
they like the
rules because it gives them comfort, you know. Not only do they like the rules, they like to remind people, other people, of the rules. So.
Just a thought that just came up from that is I attend a meditation group here in town, and the meditation group leader was talking about people seeking a spiritual bypass for their pain.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And it's exactly the same kind of thing. Oh, if I meditate and empty my mind and am forgiving and have compassion, then I can skip these messy steps in the middle.
Yeah, thank you. And Laura's absolutely right. And again, I go back to what I was saying earlier, is that the cross reminds us that if you want liberation, you want authentic healing and reconciliation, you have to face the pain, not run from it, not deny it, not pretend it's not there. God never promised us, never, ever, ever said you won't suffer. In fact, Jesus said it clearly, if you follow me, you will suffer, but I'll teach you how to work with it. I'll teach you how to integrate it. Sometimes you'll be healed, sometimes you won't, but I'll teach you how to live with it. But a lot of people just don't want to hear that lesson. Like you said, they want to... Spiritual bypass. I like that one.
Yeah, I totally agree with all that. I loved what you said about impression without expression leads to depression.
Yeah.
That is so true.
Yeah.
And I've spent many, many years in either therapy or meditation. And it wasn't until I had been in both of those about 10 years that I started the expression. And it has been so helpful. And the other thing is, you are totally correct about anger in women. It's just like,
well, thank
whoa.
You.
And I have been a very angry woman for many years.
Okay.
And I'm in a poetry group now. And a lot of my poems are very angry.
Wonderful. That's
and
great.
Some women I've noticed say, I wish I could write like that. You know, and I've squacked.
Yeah.
You know, so it's true.
Thank
it
you,
really
Tony.
Is.
Remember what St. Paul says, be angry, but sin not. And actually, forgive me for stepping in this role, but when you do not express in a healthy way, that's sin. You're abusing your emotion. You're abusing the truth of expression. I like to say it this way. I know it's kind of a fun image, but think of an emotion as a FedEx truck. It pulls up to the back of your heart and says, delivery, you ready to sign for it? Okay? And once you open up the doors of that FedEx truck, that emotion will open up and give you the message, and it's in one sentence. I'm angry that I wasn't noticed. I'm angry that I wasn't appreciated. I'm angry that my time was not valued. But once you accept it, FedEx truck says, okay, see ya. Off it goes. The emotion just is depleted. But the more you fight it, you may end up drinking it, eating more chocolates, having a big meal, yelling at all sorts of things to cover it up. So, yes, thank you. And if you can do that, it's a great gift. Everyone, yes.
Okay. Yeah, and I've learned many lessons in my short life. Mostly, I judge my life as the first half wrestling with the devil, second half wrestling with God. And that's when all the fun began. It has been my experience that the part that we don't deal with has to do with our emotions.
Yes.
And they're a very dangerous thing and very difficult to get a hold of. And I have discovered many things about myself through other people. My children, especially. Just a month ago, my daughter uncovered a trait I had for a long time. I never really looked at it. And she gently shared it with me, and I'm still writing about it, you know. But with all these discoveries, like I found out, they're emotional, and I can't do it alone. I have to realize that I cannot do it alone.
Yeah.
It may be a group, maybe a therapist, or just a bunch of friends in a support group or whatever, but I need to bounce off other people, but only other people with like ideas that I have. I'm very cautious about being in a safe group.
Yeah.
For me, a safe group is someone who believes like I do, a spiritual trend. And the second thing is that I can trust them. The anonymity is important.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you, Ed. You know, I belonged to a men's group back in the early 90s. And it was a very, very helpful group for me. And as I was saying goodbye to these men, I was in New York because I was getting a degree there and came back after about 2 years. And I was saying goodbye to this one guy. His name was Charles. He was younger than I was. And he said, you know, Jim, he said, you're a good man. He says, you will become a great man when you make friends with your anger. Now, I got to tell you, as soon as he said that, I was ready to hit him. But, you know, he was right on. And I agree with what Ed's saying. That group was safe. And because I trusted Charles and the group, I had to really think about that. And it wasn't until I was in another men's group and we did this this psychodynamic work, which involved me connecting with my anger, that they got me to this point where I'd never been this angry in my life. And I was screaming, you know, this will never happen again. And this big guy, he's about this tall, about this wide, he had this 4-foot mirror behind him. And he said, because I kept saying over and over, this will never again. And I was hoarse. And he smiled and says, Jim, we believe you. He said, here's the guy you have to make believe. And he pulls the mirror out. That was the best gift. Because for the first time in my life, I looked into my angry face and I saw my blue eyes and they were on fire. But what really touched me and I started to cry was I was in control. Because a little bit about my family, my dad was a rageaholic. And when he'd get angry, his eyes were all over the place. He was a crazy man. And I felt like if I got angry, I'd be a crazy man. My mom was the opposite. She'd get angry and she was in denial. So I was caught between these two who were so dysfunctional that anger just wasn't dealt with. But just by seeing my face, I realized, I'm okay. And I liked the feeling of power. And it was at that moment I realized, I can do a lot of damage with this anger, or I could direct it. And the anger that any of you feel against where the church is at or what you've experienced in terms of trauma or abuse, That is what we call a righteous anger. It means it's a right emotion, right on. But what you do with it can become immoral and destructive, or it can become filled with grace. Jesus did what he did. The civil rights movement happened because it happened because of a righteous anger guided by a deep, tough love. You see? So these are the type of things, like Ed's pointing out, that being in a small group of friends, it can encourage you with emotions you might be afraid of. Just remember, it's a FedEx truck giving you a delivery. That's it. And then once you get the line, then it's like, oh, okay, I can deal with this. Well, God bless you. Please keep this up. This is wonderful. You're a wonderful, blessed group. Thank you.
Thank you.